Tonight, 164 Group Speaks has a wonderful opportunity to introduce a young lady who I've come to see and respect in what she does in AA. When I first met her, she seemed quiet and kind of reserved, but I find that there's a lot of strength behind that look. She has taken on responsibility in the 164 group on Tuesday nights and has been managing a position of trust, meaning she's the one that sets up and she comes in and breaks down and handles all the items that we have here, the amenities, in order to run a meeting. And I've heard her talk about recovery, and she seems to be in the solution. And this is, I don't know if it's her first speaking engagement, but it's definitely first to me and new to me, and I can't wait to hear it. And with that, I introduce you to Natalie W.
Thank you. Name's Natalie. I'm an alcoholic. Faces. I'm really nervous, so just bear with me. My sobriety date is August 3rd, 2011, and I'm 20 years old, so I'm a baby. And remember when I first started coming around to AA, people used to say, you know, all the old-timers and everybody, you're only 20 years old. At the time, I was 19. You're 19 years old. I drank longer than you've been alive, or I've drank more than you've, or I spilt more than you drank, or whatever. And I used to get so mad. I used to get so mad at that statement, but you know, I look at it now as like I'm really lucky that I came into AA when I did, because I know firsthand what it's like to be 16 and 17 years old and know that my life has nowhere else to go. Like, I was content and very okay with the fact that I was going to die at 16 or 17 or not make it to my 20th birthday, because I was going to be drunk in a ditch, and that was all right. And through the power of this program, you know, I'm alive today and I have a message today, and I'm really happy to share that with you guys. But growing up, I'll talk a little bit about that. Alcohol was always kind of a part of my family. I wouldn't call my mom an alcoholic. That's between her and God. But definitely saw her drink quite a bit throughout my childhood. First time I really even asked my mom about alcohol, I was maybe 5 or 6, and every night I noticed she would get this bottle out of the freezer, and I didn't know what it was. I didn't really know why. All I knew was that this bottle that she had in the freezer would make her act silly and happy and just goofy. And I remember asking her one night, what was in the bottle in the freezer that makes you act so funny? She said it was her happy drink, and it helped her to remember her my Grams, which was her mom who passed away. And she always said she was never an alcoholic, that alcoholics only drink first thing in the morning, and they drank all day long. Alcoholics didn't have jobs. Alcoholics didn't have families. So she was never an alcoholic. She just liked to drink so she could be happy. And, you know, I was a little kid, and that was just okay, and that was just a part of how Mom was. You know, at night she would drink, and she'd be happy. I had my first drink. I think I was 12, and I remember I was watching TV with my mom one night, and she was drinking, and she asked me if I wanted to drink with her. And it was vodka and orange juice, and about 3 of them later, I was gone. And that's when I first experienced being drunk. And I find it funny, but the only really thing I remember about that is I felt older. I felt free and silly, and I remember laying in bed that night, and I was poking my face, and I thought it was hilarious that I couldn't feel it. I was like, this is so funny, and like sticking my tongue out and biting my tongue, and I was just like, this is the coolest thing in the world. This is pretty cool. I can see why Mom drinks the way that she does. And that kind of sparked a little bit idea that, you know, that's what alcohol does. It makes you happy and it makes you just feel good. I have a younger sister. She's 6.5 years younger than me, and she's a great kid. And growing up, my mom really didn't believe in like babysitters, so she would go to work throughout the day, and I'd stay home with her. And I kind of helped raise her in a way, as when we were both younger. But I remember telling my sister all the time, you know, like, oh, it's time to go to bed because, you know, mom's going to start drinking, whatever. And we both knew that that's just how the way it was. But as a kid, through elementary school, through the beginning of middle school, I was very, like Toby said, I was reserved, very shy. I didn't have a lot of friends. I kept to myself a lot. I didn't really talk to anybody, but I made good grades. I was like the little honor roll student. I was like the annoying little kid who brought the teacher an apple. And not literally, but like that's who I was. And but yeah, I made good grades. And the only like real friend that I actually kept through my childhood, we met in fourth grade and we stayed friends up until maybe halfway through high school. But other than that, like, I really didn't have a whole lot of friends. I stuck to myself, and my problems were my problems, and they weren't yours, and I'm just going to do my own thing. And the way my middle school ran was all the sixth graders had one set of classes in one building, and then the seventh and eighth graders had another building. And when you're in seventh grade, the same teachers you have are the ones you're going to have as an eighth grader. And so my seventh grade year, it started out, and like first day, there was this one teacher that I had, one teacher that everyone said was difficult and hard and, you know, like really mean. So remember, I literally remember this, sitting in the first day of seventh grade, and I sat in my classroom like this, just because I wanted to be like, I wanted him to like me, and I wanted things to go smooth, and I was a good little student, you know, I did my thing, and I made good grades again. And the next year, I came back to school, eighth grade, and I remember him looking at me after school one day, and he said, "What happened to you? What happened to you?" And the summer of, like, my seventh to eighth grade, like, year, there was a lot of stuff going on as far as, like, things in my family, and a lot of tragic stuff happened. And in my life, like, whenever, you know, as far back as I can remember, whenever bad things happened or whenever I would get upset, I didn't tell anybody. I just kept it to myself. I thought, you know, like I said, like, my problem, I'll figure it out on my own. You don't need to know about it. I'll fix it myself. I'll be okay. Like, I'll be okay was my mantra for, like, everything. And that carried on throughout, you know, a good part of, you know, my life. And about maybe 14 is when, like, you know, everything just started going downhill. I discovered, you know, like, my mom, you know, she drank quite often. She always had alcohol around the house, and if I wanted to bring it to school with me in a Mountain Dew bottle every day, then I was going to do that, and I could get away with it. So I did, and I don't really remember a lot of middle school and part of high school, and because I knew that alcohol was there. And that was my escape. Like, I didn't really have anyone to talk to or go to, or that was my problem solver. You know, if I was stressed with school or, like, sad that I didn't have people to talk to, that's what I went to. And it became my fix-it. And I like the way that alcohol made me feel. It made me, like I said, it made me feel older, and it made me feel, it was there for me. It was there for me when I didn't think anybody else in the world was. And, throughout high school, I really didn't, I played sports. I wasn't really popular. I didn't really have a whole lot of friends in high school either. I still just kind of did my own thing, and, you know, kind of still stuck to myself, but, there were some tragic things that went on, and, I didn't know how to, I didn't have anyone to go to, and I didn't have any way to process it because I wasn't talking to anybody. I wouldn't tell people my problems. They didn't need to know. And so midway through my senior year, which I really don't even remember, that's when things started to go really downhill. And I really stopped. That's when I kind of stopped caring about what happened to me and what, you know, what was going on in my life and who I affected. And that's what alcohol did. You know, it took away everything that I thought I cared about, everything that I liked, all my desires, what I wanted to be, you know, that was gone. Like, I remember, you know, being in, like, elementary school and writing little letters about, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up and all that kind of stuff. and all those dreams and aspirations that I had as a kid, like, when things got bad, I had no idea who I was anymore. I remember one of the first times my mom, confronted me about, you know, is there anything wrong with you? Are you okay? Are you okay? Because you're, like, not going to school anymore. You're failing all your classes. Like, is everything going on all right with you? And I would play it off like everything was fine. Or when she would see me messed up, I would just say I was tired, or, you know, nothing's wrong. I'm fine. I'm okay. And that worked for a little while. And then I just started losing things one by one. Like, first it was, you know, like, I was going to fail. First I was failing all my classes, and then, you know, my sister, I wanted nothing to do with me. My best friend, the only real friend that I really had, told me abruptly, like, you know, you need to find a new friend. I became from being, like, you know, the friends that I even had weren't even really friends. You know, the people that I was, like, partying with and using with and stuff like that, it came to a place where, like, they didn't even want me around. When you're using buddies and your drug dealer tells you, you know, you need to go find somewhere else to go, you know, usually that's a good indication that you're not doing so well. But it didn't matter what happened, and it didn't matter who I lost. Like, it wasn't enough to make me stop drinking or make me stop doing what I was doing. I didn't care who I lost, and I didn't care what, you know, who I hurt. When I was, I think it was maybe December of 2010, I came home from wherever I was at. I came home and I walked in the front door and no one else was home. So, and I was already drinking for the day. I was already loaded. I walked in, and the next thing I remember, I was sitting in my living room, and my mom was sitting across from me, and she was just sobbing, and I couldn't figure out why she was upset. I was, like, coming out of a blackout, and apparently my sister had come home from school that day and found me laying in the middle of the living room floor, and she thought I was dead. So she called the paramedics, and she called 911, and, you know, they had to explain, you know, to, at the time, a 13-year-old that, you know, Natalie's not dead. She's just got a problem. And that wasn't even enough. You know, that happened multiple times, you know, where I would come home late at night and then be passed out in the driveway when she would get up to go to school in the morning, you know. It didn't matter. Like, I hurt that she hurt, but all that did was fuel me to keep going. I mean, like, it wasn't enough to make a dent in any kind of, in anything. I was first introduced to any sort of recovery. I was 19. I just turned 19, and I woke up out of a blackout in the backseat of my mom's car, and I was all confused. And I said, "Where are we going?" And she said, "We're going to Turning Point." So, I wasn't having it. She's like, "When we get there, we're gonna figure out a solution." It worked, you know. It worked for your cousin. He went there, and he's doing okay. But something needs to be done because this isn't working. So we pulled up at Turning Point, and I'm mad, and I'm pissed off, and I'm upset, and I didn't want to be there. And I went inside, and we did this little intake. And I remember sitting there with a counselor and filling out this little questionnaire about, like, how much do you drink and what do you do and da-da-da-da-da. And I remember, like, circling, like, nothing on all of the answers. Like, nope, never done that. Nope, never done that. Nope, never done that. I remember he asked me, he was like, "So you only drink maybe once or twice a week?" And I was like, "Yep." He's like, "Are you drunk right now?" I said, "No, I'm not drunk right now. I was drunk this morning." And I remember after, like, the little intake, it was me, the therapist, and my mom, and he looked at my mom and he said, "She is lying about everything. He didn't say this, but she's bullshitting you." And I was, but I didn't want to stay there. I didn't want to stay, and I didn't want to be stuck in treatment because, you know, I had so many friends. I had so many friends, and I had my family, and how was I going to see my family, and how was I going to do everything? I'm only 19. I can't go to rehab. That's going to ruin my life. And in all reality, like, I didn't have a life. I didn't have friends. I really didn't have a family anymore, you know. But I'm a great manipulator, which is a gift I've always had. So I manipulated my mom into letting me do like an outpatient type thing. So that was okay, and that was, I guess, in her opinion, like she kind of got somewhere. So for the next couple weeks, I put on a happy face, like everything was just gonna get better, just to please her. And I started doing this outpatient thing, which I really wasn't feeling anyway, but, you know, I was playing along with it. And it was, like, 3 times a week, and she would, you know, drop me off, and I would go to this, like, 3-hour thing, and she'd pick me up later, and then, you know, for the next couple days, everything would just kind of be okay. And then I'd go back and put on a happy face, and that lasted about 1.5 weeks, and I was out again, you know. I think it was, I only went to like maybe 6 or 7 of those little meetings, and I remember waking up one morning and from drinking and sneaking out of my house and drinking the night before, I woke up the next morning and there was my mom and my friend, her name's Kim, and they're sitting at the foot of my bed, and Kim is just crying, and I haven't seen her in maybe like 6 months, and this is a girl who's like been a friend of mine since we were kids. They're sitting at the end of my bed, and she's crying, and my mom's crying, and I remember Kim, she looked at me, and she said, "I'm sick and tired of watching my best friend slowly kill herself and not care, because I care." And I don't know if I had ever felt something like hit my heart, like, so heavy. Like, out of all the people that I had hurt, and all the people that I had, like, you know, all the lives that I have, like, interfered with, you know, like that just hit me. And I don't know why, but I said, okay, I want help. And that night, they took me to Town and Country, and I stayed there, and I detoxed for a little bit, and I didn't go back home. I let my mom take me to inpatient treatment, and I stayed there for about 2.5 months. And for the first time, like, that was my first dip in recovery. Like, not recovery, because I wasn't in recovery, because I was kind of just going there. But my first experience, of AA, like, in my life. And I remember when I first went into Turning Point, they handed me this little packet, and it was, like, another one of these little questionnaire things, and it said, like, what's a white chip? What's a 90 and 90? Like, what's all this stuff? And I thought a white chip had something to do with poker. I had no idea about AA at all. And so anyway, I stayed for this, I stayed for about 2.5 months, and I thought that was it. I thought I did the deal. I did what my mom wanted me to do. I stayed in this treatment center, and I learned a little bit, and when I talked to my mom, she told me I sounded happier, and I sounded like a person again, and I asked her if I could come home, and she said, let me talk to your therapist and see what he has to say. So he wanted me to go to a halfway house, and I wasn't really feeling that, so I convinced my mom to let me come home. I told her that, you know, I was fixed, and I got it, and everything was fine, and she believed me. So I went home, and I was drunk again within 2 weeks. And the entire time that I was in treatment, it wasn't there because I wanted to get better. And I believe this program is something that you have to want and you have to be desperate for. You can't do it for anybody else other than yourself. If you don't want it for you, then it's not going to work. You have to want it. And at the time, I didn't. I was just there because I really had no other option. But after that, within that 2 weeks of being home, a really good friend of mine passed away. And she was 19, same age as I was. And I remember going to her funeral, and it was my mom, Kim went with me, and, you know, a few other people. You know, she was young. And after the funeral, Kim came up to me, and she said, "She's 19, Natalie." She's like, "She's 19. She's how old you are." She's like, "I don't want to be at a funeral for a 19-year-old girl and have it be you in the casket." And, you know, that night I relapsed. Like, her saying that, it hit home, but it wasn't enough, you know, because I really didn't want to stop. I wanted to stop hurting people, but, like, I couldn't. I dabbled in and out for a little longer after that. I went into a halfway house and, you know, stayed there for a little while and, you know, let my life pick up again. And I got some friends back. I got a little bit of my family back. I didn't have a sponsor. I really wasn't working the steps. I would kind of have a sponsor. I would ask someone to be my sponsor and then, you know, get to step one and two and then maybe three and then I want to find a new sponsor because things aren't working out. And one, two, three, skip sponsors, things aren't working out. And then I had this bright idea, excellent idea, that I should get I should move out of the halfway house because, you know, I've got a good group of friends there. And, you know, I kind of have a sponsor and maybe it'll just, you know, get easier as I go along and I really don't have to do a whole lot. And had a great idea of getting an apartment with my roommate from treatment. And if anyone has done that or thinking about doing that, I would not suggest it. We had an apartment together for a couple months, and in that couple months, you know, the half sponsor that I had became like no sponsor at all, and maybe the two or three meetings we were going to a week turned into like no meetings a week, because if she didn't feel like going to a meeting, then I wouldn't go to a meeting and vice versa. And you know, the little inkling of like any kind of recovery that I had just dropped off. And I came home, I'll go back a little bit, and without like with no sponsor and not going to meetings and living with someone who is just like co-signing all of this, and you know, there's no recovery in either one of our lives at all. Like, my life got crazy again. My life got really crazy again, you know, except I wasn't drinking. And I would wake up the next morning and have all of the same like remorse and all of that kind of stuff that I had when I was drinking, except I remember everything that I did. And, that's what happens. That's what happens to, like, for me in my life when I take away, or when I'm not working a program, or I have no like sort of values or principles to live my life by. My life gets crazy, and my life gets crazy really fast. And I ended up relapsing again. I relapsed, and it was going to happen. It was expected to happen because I wasn't doing anything. I was living the same way that I used to, except I wasn't drinking and getting messed up all the time. And 2 weeks after I relapsed, she relapsed. And a week after that, the boyfriend that she had, also from the treatment center, so that's another bonus, also from the treatment center, he relapsed and then stole her car and then traded her car. And all this crazy stuff is happening, all this crazy stuff. And, you know, I finally decided that, you know, I don't know why, but I couldn't be there anymore. So I moved back to Newport Richey where I was, you know, live where my parents were and where I was staying before I went to Tampa. And I really wasn't convinced that AA was going to be like the cure-all fix-all, but I didn't see the harm of actually trying it and giving it a shot. And so I got a different sponsor, well, actually kind of got a sponsor again, and had her for a little while, but did the same thing. I did like one, two, three, like, and then I was like, I'm not really feeling any better. I'm supposed to have a sponsor, I'm supposed to talk to you, but this isn't really going anywhere. And I was still going to more meetings. I was actually talking to a few other people, which I hadn't done before. And I met this girl who I actually connected with. And like, I don't really connect with people. I'm at a distance. Like, I'll say hi to you and I'll be nice to you. I'm very nice, but I won't let you in here. Like, that's me. Like, my problems are my problems, and I don't really want to let anybody else in. But this girl I connected with. And I asked her to be my sponsor, and I told her that I was actually willing to go through the steps, and I asked her to help me do it. And, you know, I started meeting up with her, I talked to her, and we got kind of close, and we were going through my fourth step, and she relapsed. And so here I am, like, I finally find this girl, and I connect with her, and things are going good, and I'm talking to people, and I'm starting to feel happy. In the middle of my fourth step, I'm just an insane lunatic anyway, and I'm probably bitchy and mean to everybody. And she relapsed. And I'm like, now what do I do? And a friend of mine was like, what you do is don't sit in it. You keep moving and you move on. And that's what I did. I was still really bitter, and I kind of didn't want to do that, but, you know, I knew it would happen if I didn't. And I asked my grand sponsor, which was, you know, well, she's my grand sponsor, if she would be my temporary sponsor until I figured out what I really wanted to do. And she's like, okay, all right, I'll be your temporary sponsor. So then that was one day, and 2 days later, I was like, yeah, you need to be my sponsor because I'm going crazy. So, and I do believe, like, I do believe today with everything that I am, like, that was meant to happen, and it happened for a reason, because, like, my sponsor now, like, I connect with her better than I have connected with, like, any other woman in the world, you know. She took me through the rest of the steps, and I remember we were sitting and doing my fourth step, and I was so nervous to do fourth step. It's, like, what I avoided. Like, I did not want to do the fourth step, because that was going to open up so many things that I just didn't want to go there. I didn't want to go there with anything. And I did the fourth step with her, and she looked at me, and she's like, I get you. I get you, and, you know, there's nothing you can say to me that's going to make me, like, not want to be your sponsor anymore, or, like, that I haven't done myself. And I guess that, like, reassured that, like, it's okay to accept the things that I've done in the past, and it's okay to let someone in, you know. So I went through the rest of the steps, and I found not only, like, happiness and, like acceptance for who I am and where I've been, but, like, the fourth step for me is, like, you know, what opened my eyes to, like, I guess everything. Like, I look at the fourth step as, like, a blueprint to, like, who I am. It's a blueprint to, like, where I've been, who I am, and where I'm going, and why I function the way that I do. Like, I know within the, like, the bottom of my heart, like, I'm an alcoholic. And, like, if I put alcohol in my body, like, where my, every, all the dirty stuff in my fourth step and all the things that I've done, the places that I've been, alcohol in my body and without a program to, like, lead me on, like, on the right path of life, that's where I will, like, go back to. That's where I will go back to, without a doubt. And, when I first came in, like, I didn't believe that. I didn't believe that at all. I honestly kind of thought AA was, like, a cult. I remember sitting in Turning Point and, like, hearing all of the readings and hearing all of the prayers and just thinking, like, this is just, like, all these people are nuts. Like, they're full of it. Like, are you serious? Like, people really sit in meetings all around the world and just talk? Like, I didn't get it. And, you know, someone told me that, you know, when you first come into the program, you don't have to get it. You don't have to believe it. You just have to keep coming back. You have to keep coming back. Maybe you don't even know why you're coming back. And, yeah, so, finished the steps, and, I really don't know when it happened, but for over the past year, like, I went from being like, well, I know how it happened, and it's like, you know, the power of this program and the God of my understanding today, and, but, like, I enjoy being alive today. Like, I enjoy living, and I enjoy being alive today, and, like, going from, like, being 16, like, ready to die, like, that was, like, being dead drunk in a ditch somewhere was my only option to, like, being a successful member of society. Like, I have a job today. Like, my sister called me today, and we watched a movie for 2 hours. Like, a sister and being a friend and being, like, just a helpful person is what I've become today, just because, like, not because I really believe that it would work, just because, like, I saw it in other people. I saw it in other people, and I knew that there's people in those crazy meetings that they talked about themselves, and I didn't understand. Like, they were happy, and I wasn't. And, like I said, I have a job today, and I'm at the best place, like, that I think I've ever been in my life. Like, and, like, I'm, like I said, I'm only 20, and, like, I have my whole life in order to live, as long as I stick with the program that got me there. You know, I believe that I'm alive today because I found AA, or maybe AA found me, or whatever, but, like, and if I let go of that, I know where I'm gonna go back to. But, something I will say, like, as when I was a kid, I lived for a little period of time. I lived with my grandparents. Well, my mom and I moved back in with my grandparents because we really didn't have a place to go. And my grandpa is a pastor at a Baptist church. So a lot of my childhood was very, like, you can't watch TV, don't watch cartoons. Like, unless it's gospel music, it's the devil. So that was kind of my perception of religion and perception of God for a long time. Like, I read this in a meditation not too long ago, and I thought that was the funniest thing. But a lot of, I guess it's like, a lot of my childhood perception of God was like your principal. Like your principal of like your elementary school. Like all high and tight and neat in a black suit. Up on a pedestal better than everybody else. Sifting through your files and all your dirty stuff secretly. And then when he finds something bad that you do wrong, he roasts you. Like, that was my perception of God. I don't know if that makes sense to you, but it made sense to me. And, you know, when I heard that, you know, this is a spiritual program, not a religious program, I was like, awesome, because I really don't like the whole God thing. And, you know, when my sponsor first gave me a description of what her, you know, her God, like, in her head, what her God looked like, I was like, what? What? Yeah, and she told me, she's like, you know, your higher power can be anything, you know, anything you want it to be, it's your higher power. And when I fully grasped that, and when I fully understood that it doesn't have to be, like, the principal in the black suit who, like, has a whip or whatever, like, it's mine. And I have a strong connection with my higher power today, and I pray and I meditate on a daily basis, and that's what gets me through, you know, that's what gets me through the day, that's what starts my day, that's what gets me through, like, when times are stressful at work or when I'm irritated with somebody or whatever. And I do not follow this program perfectly, like, throughout this past year, yeah, I do not follow any of this perfectly. I've messed up a lot, and I've hurt people over the past, you know, like, year or so being sober, but I'm glad, you know, I'm glad I haven't done this perfectly, because I think if you do something perfect and you're perfect, you have no room to grow. And I'm glad that I have room to grow, and I have room to learn, and, you know, it's ever-changing, and I still have a little bit of time, so... I don't know. I'm just really grateful. I'm blessed. Like I said, I'm blessed to be alive today, and I'm blessed to be here, and I'm really nervous, so if we have a little of extra time, that's probably why, but that's all I have to say.
Natalie W. Awesome job.